Why work harder when you can work smarter? I mean, we're all looking for ways to make work and life just a little bit easier. Enter the Ford F-150 truck. It helps you get the job done in the smartest way possible. Have you seen the Pro Access tailgate? It improves access to the bed and cargo, which makes it easier to load in tight spaces. Think about the time and hassle you'll save with that feature alone. And I haven't even mentioned the mobile power source, Pro Power On Board. You can power up to 7.2 kilowatts outside your F-150. You're already thinking about all the ways you can put that to use, aren't you? See, I told you, smarter. Tough this smart can only be called F-150. Find your local Ford dealer at Ford.com. Pro Access tailgate available starting spring 2024. See owner's manual for important operating instructions. This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at Progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Talk is Jericho.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And today, it's Boombox release day. The new Fozzy record has officially arrived. Get it wherever you buy and stream music. And let's celebrate with a special Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Chris Jericho, Duff McKagan calling you. Hey, listen, my wife said nothing rhymes with orange. I said, you're right, it doesn't. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
I debated with Duff about that, whether it makes sense or not. And I said, well, can you call it in the other way? And he just didn't even bother. So that's what we get. I think it's better. Nothing rhymes with orange. And I said, you're wrong. It doesn't. Because nothing, she's saying nothing rhymes with, if you have to explain the joke, it's not very good. So anyways, Duff wrote it. Duff chose it. Duff read it. And even though I was hoping for something a little better for Boombox release day, I still thank Duff McKagan, Rock and Roll Hall of Famer. And of course, one of the cornerstones of Guns N' Roses, who are headlining Welcome to Rockville on May 21st in Daytona Beach, Florida. And then they'll be out touring Europe and South America for the summer. Go see them if you have a chance. And come see us. Come see Fozzy. We played a killer show last night at the legendary Whiskey A Go-Go on the Sunset Strip. The fourth time we've played there. Fourth time we've headlined there. And tonight we're celebrating the release of Boombox just down the road in Garden Grove at the Garden Grove Amphitheater. Then the Save the World Tour hits Roseville out by Sacramento on Saturday, San Francisco on Sunday at the Great American Music Hall. Monday, we're in Reno, Nevada at the Virginia Street Brewhouse. Then the following Thursday, the 12th, Colorado Springs, 13th, Denver, 14th, Wichita, Kansas, Fort Smith, Arkansas, and we wrap up the tour in Sauget, Illinois, St. Louis at Pops. Still tickets available. Go to FozzyRock.com. Still VIPs available as I'm doing this intro. I got to do VIP very soon. They are ready, they're willing, and they're able, ready for you. It's the best meet and greet in the business. We play a mini set for you. Some songs you won't even hear later that night at the show. We'll meet you, we'll greet you, we'll hang out with you. It is a rock and roll party. Oh, yeah. FozzyRock.com for all ticket and Fozzy VIP information. And don't forget ChrisJerichoCruise.com for all information about Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea, the Four Leaf Clover. We're setting sail February 2nd, 2023. We got a great lineup joining us. And for the first time ever, we're going to Great Stirrup Cay, our very own private island. Come be a part of the vacation of a lifetime. ChrisJerichoCruise.com. All right, today, because Boombox is finally here, all of Fozzy is back on Talk is Jericho. Rich Ward, Billy Gray, PJ Farley, and our new drummer Grant Brooks join me to talk about the making of Boombox. We do a track-by-track breakdown, share our favorite songs to play live, tell stories behind the songs, get an inside look at Rich Ward's creative process with our producer Johnny Andrews and myself, discover why all the vocals were recorded at my house in Tampa, and find out why the pandemic lockdown was the best thing to happen to this record. It very, very much was beneficial. So we get into the album art, the title, why the song sequence was so important to us in this day and age of one song at a time listening. We also explain how both PJ and Grant came to join Fozzy in the middle of the pandemic. We're celebrating all things Boombox. Our new record is out today, and you can get it now wherever you buy or stream records, and you hear all about it. The celebration starts right here. Boombox on Talk is Jericho. We'll be right back. So after many years, finally, Boombox is coming out. It's out today. So congratulations. Big party time for that. And when, because I've been making a joke on all the radio I've been doing that we called this record Chinese Fozzocracy because it took so long to make and record and release. So when did you start working on this, Rich?
The timeline is blurry because it was like, when was the first time you kissed a girl? You remember that. But when was the eighth time? And like it was one of those things that I think it had to have been 2019.
Well, let me just give you a little thing.
Yes.
I remember we did the Maiden show at the stadium in L.A., and we wanted to have a single ready. And by the way, two-fifths of the band was different at that point in time. So we wanted to have a single ready for the Maiden stadium show. And so I remember recording Nowhere to Run in May of 2019. That's when I did the vocal tracks for that. So it's May of 2022, so it's at least three years for my performance alone. Never mind how much time you and Johnny put together the songs. And had you put together all 12 songs at that point?
No.
Or was that just the first one because we needed a single?
Correct.
To coincide with the big show?
Yeah, originally you and I had talked about having a 2020 release and calling the album 2020.
Right.
And the idea was, let's have an album ready by 2020. And so thank you for that timeline because that makes total sense now. I remember, I mean, Johnny and I we played demos for you. We had Ugly on the Inside. We had My Great Wall. We had Army of One. We had I Still Burn. All of these songs in their infancy. But Johnny felt like that Nowhere to Run, this is the one. This is the time.
Really?
Yes. He felt like this was the single. That's why we finished it first. He believed this was going to be the big song for us on the album. And then we finished it first so that we could have it out to promote on tour.
Right.
Not knowing that just a few months later, the whole world would hit the brakes.
And the funny thing is, the idea was 2020. We wanted to almost do it like Van Halen and release it in January of 2020. So it'd be like Van Halen did 1984 right at the beginning. And then we didn't really publicize it. And so Bon Jovi says they're going to put a record called 2020. I remember Rich was pissed. Remember that?
Yeah, because I thought, 1984 is such an amazing album title. And 2112, another fantastic.
Right.
5150.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
I love these. Like, these are great album titles. And I thought 2020 is fantastic because not only that, but having two twos and two zeros, you could use amazing
2020
merch.
Vision.
Yes, it's just all this is going to be fantastic. And then, of course, Bon Jovi steps in and steals our thunder.
But his was called 2020. There was something else to it, like 2020 Revolution or something like this. I mean, I could probably look it up, but I remember thinking, well, it's okay. Like ours is still 2020. It's different from Bon Jovi's. I remember like who's gonna
the full title?
Who's gonna care and who's gonna even buy a new Bon Jovi record? But we kind of got trumped on that, and then we got trumped on the freaking pandemic that came out when it didn't really matter what happened. So let's go back to a little bit because it was Billy and Rich and I. And Frank Fonseray and Randy Drake were in the band at the time. So hold on, I'm just looking at this Bon Jovi record. Did he actually release it just as 2020? Yeah, it was just called 2020. So there you go. So Bon Jovi, you now have a record that for the rest of the time, no one will ever want to listen to because they don't want to be remembered of that shitty year. So we started to do the record and we did Nowhere to Run and we did the Nowhere to Run video. And then we went into that tour. And we had a great tour. The Iron Maiden tour, as we call it, even though it was only one show, but we built a whole tour around it. And there was a lot of momentum with the band because I remember a lot of those shows did really, really good numbers. That tour seems to stick out for me as being a good one. Do you remember that, Billy?
I do. Yeah. A lot of those shows had great numbers. And of course, topping it off with the Iron Maiden show, that was awesome. So yeah, it was rolling really good.
Yeah. Until Nowhere to Run, that went top 10.
Yes. Yes.
Hit number 10. And that was about it for that. And then, once again, the pandemic happens, right? So where were you at? And a lot of this is going to be Rich at the beginning, and PJ and Grant are here as well. But where were you at when the pandemic came? How many songs were written? I know it's kind of fuzzy, but how did the pandemic affect this record, basically?
It made it the best record we've ever released. And the reason was our process has always been write record, demo record. send record out to all band members. Band members collaborate, come together, make record, record record, release album. This time, we decided to go ahead and record Nowhere to Run as a standalone. So no other, we've never recorded drums just for one song ever before. Right. It's always record drums for the album. So what we ended up doing was recording a couple of songs at a time. So we recorded Nowhere to Run. Then we worked on...
We also had My Great Wall and Ugly before the lockdown.
Correct. Right. And that was fantastic for us because all of a sudden we were allowed to concentrate on a couple of songs at a time.
Right.
So sometimes it can be kind of overwhelming, as any musician who's ever made a record knows. It's like, wow, you're overwhelmed with the amount of work there is to write and record an album. The details, especially the way that records are made in Fozzy, and that we've really become a band who's been interested in making studio records, not traditional AC/DC or Motorhead style records where it's live in the studio, four or five guys banging out the riffs and recorded. We are writing ambitious albums, and part of that is our love for albums like Operation Mindcrime and The Wall and Night of the Opera. And we love these ambitious albums, and we've written some live sounding records. So this is the period where Fozzy's exploring the studio, and the pandemic allowed us to really do that, because then you and I are communicating by phone. Our producer Johnny and I are working over, you know, Skype and FaceTime, and that just didn't work.
Well, the weird thing about that, because we tried that a couple of times. I remember we started doing the Winnipegger show and the Saturday Night Special. If I tried to do like a jam, I remember me and Spoo and Robert, let's do Dead Flowers. We all know that song. And when you do it on latency. StreamYard, it's all coming in on different delayed, times. Yeah. So I was latency, like, yeah, latency. They didn't figure that out. So I was like, how could you work on songs if you're playing a riff and the singing, but it's the timing is off. It sounds like all three guys are row, 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 you're boating it. So how are you guys able to do that?
We weren't.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't work. So then what I told Johnny, which is what, Chris, you and I had a discussion about the album. The first batch of songs that we started working on were fantastic songs, but there weren't big riff songs. They weren't big Fozzy riff or metal riffs. And you and I said, hey, we're going to have to go to Johnny and say, this is an opportunity. Let's make sure this album is balanced between these epic studio tracks and the traditional Fozzy bangers. Mm-hmm. So I told Johnny, how about this? Let's push pause on our collaborative writing. Let me just come up with a riff factory, come up with 10, 12, 14 riff ideas. Johnny doesn't like it when you present a song. He likes it when you present ideas.
He wants to collaborate.
Correct. Yeah. That's exactly right. Bring in a verse riff and a melody or a chorus idea or a concept. Then let's collaborate on it. And part of the reason is that he, you know, like any writing process, the more that you invest in a song idea and the more developed it is, the more your feeling's going to be hurt when the group tells you, no, we're going to do it a different way.
Demo-itis.
Yes, because you start hearing it the way you wrote it.
Yeah.
This is the way it was intended.
It has to be this way.
Yes. So Johnny's smart. He's worked with enough bands to know, like all producers, bring in some rough ideas. And I came in with, you know, a dozen really good riffs. Well, whatever really good is.
Right. For good ward riffs, which are great riffs.
Yes.
So I can say it.
And we were really excited, and Johnny was like, these are really good. And what Johnny's gift is lyrics.
Big time.
He is just such a phenomenal lyricist, and he also is a big fan of concepts. So we'll spend a lot of time discussing concepts. And that's why when I was talking to you about, hey, what ideas, what do we want to express? Because Johnny always, his concepts are super dark.
Yeah.
Like he's always tapping into the darkest side of humanity.
He's had some issues in his life.
Well, thank God. I'm so glad. Right. Otherwise, all of our songs would be the happiest
of
songs.
The thing is, too, and just to step in, as a singer, I make the analogy, and I can, is that, you know, Geddy Lee never wrote a lyric in Rush ever. So he has to take Neil Peart's lyrics and then, you know, internalize them and then make them his own. Thankfully, Johnny's writing about the darker side of the human condition and not about trees and, you know, I think I'm going bald and
cars.
Red Barchettas and these sort of things, you know, and the motor law and anthems and things like that. So you're right. He is a great lyricist, and I'll say one thing, and then you can take over again. In our band, when we started it, I was the lyric writer, and you were the song and melody writer, because that's what bands do. I had zero problems at all allowing Johnny, and not allowing, hoping that he would write all the lyrics, because he is a top-notch one percenter, Jim Morrison, Nikki Sixx, wordplay, smart, amazing lyric writer.
He really is. And the thing is that he labors over those things. Whereas I think you and I, our kind of traditional go-to on lyrics is we have these ideas and we pen stuff out. And I'm the same way. I've collaborated with you on lyrics for previous stuff. And I'm not a big sleep on it. Like my first ideas, and I'm like just spouting stuff out. Johnny will labor over words.
Yeah.
And like this, and it's because in his estimation, the most important thing is being able to communicate and connect with people through the words.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm a guitar player. I was always gravitating towards what Randy Rhoads or Eddie Van Halen or George Lynch or Yngwie Malmsteen or Angus Young. Like, how do they connect with?
And to me, as a lyricist, if you look at, like, you know, Sandpaper, Every Night I Sing It, it's like I went and saw The Cult last week, and that was a very cult word imagery. Plastic, fantastic, lobster, telephone. Doesn't mean anything, but that sounds pretty cool when you sing it if you're Ian Asprey. For me, you know, a cat scratch, a whiplash, a witch hunt in black, sandpaper. What the fuck does that mean? Nothing, but it's cool and it's fun. Johnny doesn't work that way.
No.
He would never allow that lyric.
He would never allow it.
Never allow that lyric.
He has rules.
Yeah. And we made him the principal, once again, the captain of the ship, where what he says goes as far as decision-making as the producer of the record.
And he will tell you straight out, part of the reason why active rock radio suffers a bit is because there's not a lot of danger in it. Things feel a little safe in stock. He was like, you know, everybody's talking about, oh, the pain and the scars. And he was like, we're not going to talk about pain and the scars because those are just such generic, general terms. Let's be specific. Let's talk about things like in a way that we really can articulate these feelings and dig, scratch, so that we're peeling back the onion layers. Let's not just talk about the outer skin. And he's so good. I mean, those lyrics for Ugly on the Inside are so good. He really has such a fantastic understanding of the human condition, which is why he's such a great captain.
And also, for people that don't know, that's why he's had, I don't know, 20 number ones or 20 top tens and 10 number ones, whatever it is. Very successful songwriter for a litany of bands that are
lots of gold albums. Yeah. He's excellent. And we like him. And we like him because he kind of completes us as a writing unit. That's the whole point of a band is if everyone has the same strength, the team's not going to grow. It's always good if everyone brings something separate. And then all of a sudden, the band is stronger than its individual parts because each member completes us.
Right.
And that's what Bob Rock and Rick Rubin and Mutt Lang, we were really looking for our version of that. And you see these documentaries where you see Angus and Malcolm saying, I'll never work with Mutt Lang again.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it's difficult to work with strong personalities, people who have a vision for your band and sit on the outside and say, you guys are great, but here's how you can be better. I see your strengths and I see your weaknesses. Let's steer into the strengths and shy away from these other things. And it's hard for someone from the outside for you to let them come in and tell you that your ideas aren't good, but it's necessary. If you don't understand band dynamics, think of it as a coach for a sports team. It's like, can you imagine a bunch of players on the field all dictating for themselves what they're going to do?
Yeah.
You have to have someone who has a vision for the tactics of the game. And that's what Johnny is for us.
All right, you guys know that I travel every week for AEW, and I'm on the road for Fozzy as well. But I don't worry about appliances or any of the stuff at my house breaking down while I'm gone, because we've got American Home Shield. And truthfully, I'm not a fix-it-myself guy anyway, so even if I was home and we had a leaky faucet or a faulty water heater, I'm not the one who's going to fix it. And unexpected breakdowns like that won't break your bank with American Home Shield warranty, because covered repairs and replacements are taken care of just like that. You just choose a plan that works for you and your budget. And then when a covered item in your home breaks, contact American Home Shield and their trusted and qualified pros will fix or replace it Based on the coverage in your agreement, right now you can get 20% off. Just go to ahs.com/Jericho and save that 20%. That's ahs.com/Jericho for 20% off any plan. American Home Shield, don't worry, be warranty. See ahs.com/contracts for coverage details, including limit amounts, fees, limitations, and exclusions. New Jersey residents, the product being offered is a service contract and is separate and distinct from any product or service warranty which may be provided by the home or building manufacturer. Just to kind of go a little bit forward, when there was the lockdown, I know for a while, because we recorded in Johnny's house, and he wasn't comfortable having us in his house. No one really knew what to do, what was going on. So you mentioned that you had a lot of these songs. When did you finally, when were you able to connect with Johnny to kind of finish the writing of the songs? Because the lockdown started, like we said, in March of 2020. I ended up doing the vocals for this 12 songs. I had to redo the vocals for some. We'll talk about that in basically March of 21. So that was a year. Is that, did you start going to his house? Did you start meeting up with him in masks and everything?
Yes, masks and social distancing.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. Johnny, he has family members that have health issues.
And he was super conservative with it.
Yeah,
which is,
he was. I mean, he was concerned about, hey, I want to be able to be around my family and I don't want to create issues.
Right.
So eventually we got to that point where Johnny was comfortable enough where he and I were both vaccinated and we were able to be in a room together where he felt comfortable, and I was happy to make him comfortable, as you should, right? Yeah. And luckily for me, I went against the rules that are set in stone, and I developed a bunch of ideas pretty thoroughly. And I brought them in with a lot of confidence and said, okay, because so much time had passed, it was like, we're going to put this record out in 2025, or are we going to do this?
Chinese fuzzocracy.
Yeah, we're going to do this. And Johnny really liked him. The good news is that I had more song. In other words, he only had to pick his favorites.
Right.
It wasn't one of these things where he had to use all of them. He could focus in on the songs that he most resonated with.
And I've already heard two or three other riffs and song ideas that are just as good as anything on this record.
Correct. So, we have so many leftover ideas. Yeah. And part of that was just due to what are we going to do?
Yeah.
You know, when you have a great roster sitting on the bench, what players do you put in?
Yeah.
And you know, so luckily for us, that we've got great kernels of songs for the next one.
Well, it was interesting because once the songs were finally ready, then we had to get the vocals done, because then suddenly there was this, because we're now on Sony Records, Sony Music, and there's a lot of deadlines. And once things started to get back on, it's like, you guys have to have a record done in like a month. We're like, what? Like, what are you talking about? We worked the deadline up, but we only had a certain amount of time to do my vocals, which I think was the last thing, because you guys were all in Atlanta, came in, did your parts.
I tracked guitars after you.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah. You sang to demo guitars.
Okay. So let me just tell the story, though. So I couldn't go to Atlanta, or I was working with AW. And as we decided what was best was for Johnny to pack up his gear and come to Tampa. And where would we record? And we were trying to find a studio. And finally, at, I think, Jericho Fest, the birthday party I had a couple months prior, we were in the theater. And we built a theater in my house right before the pandemic. It was amazing. We built a theater and a gym with no idea there's a pandemic coming. 2 months later, we had movies and gym, no problem whatsoever. The theater room in my house has very high ceilings. And it was, you suggested, or maybe Johnny heard about this, and I had to do a video of filming it. And Johnny said, we can record in the theater. So we recorded all the vocals because we redid Ugly. Because Johnny, you guys didn't like the verse on that. So we did 10 songs at my house, one song a day, which is the rule that we have. And Johnny had sing for 2-3 hours, and then you got it. He would then leave his gear there, go back to wherever he was staying, and start working on whatever he was working on. So this album, the vocally, was recorded at my house, which is amazing in this day and age that we could do that.
Yeah, it really was. And it was because I saw the studio or your
theater.
And told Johnny, was like, we don't need, he's got a fantastic, I mean, your theater is fantastic.
Yeah.
The only thing we got was one of those acoustic shields.
A couple baffles.
Yeah.
Baffles is the word, yeah. Yeah, we had those kind of surrounding.
Yeah.
So anyways, just because we've got a lot to cover. So once we got that done, you did your guitars. we found, we worked with a couple different mixers, and then finally the cat who did the Volbeat stuff, Jacob.
Yep.
I believe his name is Jacob.
Or Jakob.
Jakob.
Depending on your dialect preferences.
He mixed it. We had it mastered, and it's basically been ready since May of 21, correct?
Yeah. We had Ted Jensen master it, who everyone knows from, well, if you don't know, he's from Sterling Sound. He mastered Hotel California, among every other record.
His discography is ridiculous. It's Jacob Hansen, just for you guys to know. What's his name again? Ted?
Jensen.
Yeah, I remember you sent me this guy's name, and I was like, this is almost criminal that he's doing a Fozzy record, because his, Eagles, Hotel California, Green Day, American Idiot, Norah Jones, Come Away With Me. That's about 15 million albums right there alone. He's got selected works of, I just have to tell you guys some of these ridiculous things that he worked on. Exodus, Bob Marley and the Wailers, Footloose and Fancy Free, Rod Stewart. Fast forward a bit more. The Stranger, Billy Joel. We're not even out of 1977 yet, and I just named all those albums that he's done. Some Girls, The Stones. I mean, this guy is as big as it gets. So to have the fact that he did the Fozzy record was very, very cool.
I remember when I said, hey, this guy's expensive, but before I said anything else, let me send you a list of albums he's done. And you're like, oh, yes.
Yeah, and it never ends. You know, it's just like Fabulous, Thunderbirds, Rolling Stones, Steel Wheels. It's like any big band. I'm just trying to fast forward into the 90s. Madonna, Erotica, Images and Words, Dream Theater for Metal Guys. It's like, you name it, that's what he's done. So, so who's this guy here? Frank Sinatra? Never heard of him. Hey, that's the answer to the trivia question if you've ever had Chili's.
There's always a lemon.
What does Frank Sinatra and Fozzy have in common? There you go.
Ted Jensen.
Yeah. So the album was mixed and mastered, and I want to go through a track by track and discuss the songs. But a funny thing happened on the way to the forum, as they say. Between May of 2019 and May of 2022, we have a brand new rhythm section, which to me, and this is no slight to anybody who's been in our band, 37 people have been in this band over the years. This is the best lineup of Fozzy we've ever had for so many reasons. But just quickly, PJ Farley joined us. Do you remember when you joined us? Because we did some shows in the summer of 21.
Yeah, it was August, the first week of August of 2020. And it was just a run of shows, just kind of filling
in. And Randy, our bass player, wasn't comfortable with going out on the road. So we said, well, let's do some shows. I mean, people are doing the gigs. Let's do it and give it a try. Be smart and, you know, all that other stuff. So when Randy couldn't do it, I think we might have texted the same name at the same time.
I mean, I said, what about PJ? And you said, I was just sending you, what about PJ? Yeah. Like,
what about P is what I ended up sending when you said that. I was like, you're like, what?
He was the natural thing, because you were already playing with him in quarantine. And I obviously just knew that he'd be a perfect fit for the band.
Because he was on the cruise with us, which was in January of 20, another thing that happened right before the lockdown. So timing-wise, you were just in the right place at the right time.
It's a real thing.
Because I remember you saying something to me at some point, if you ever need somebody, which is basically very funny because Grant said it, and we'll get to that. When was that?
It was, we were talking about how quarantine came together, and I'm like, yeah, dude, anytime you need me for anything, you know, I'm
because you wanted to get into a radio rock band again. You do a lot of great stuff.
Yeah, I mean, with as many bands as I got going on, I still, I always long for the days of, just getting in that groove band, where you can get on a bus for a couple weeks, get in the zone, because for the last decade, the majority of my touring has been fly dates and hit and runs, throw and goes, and which is great. And it really does make you a better person to play under those conditions, in so many different bands and stuff. But I hadn't been in a touring band.
Right, because you were playing with Lita Ford and Eric Martin and Trickster and Raw.
Right.
And your own PJ Farley solo records, which are great. But to be in Fozzy, where we're out in the bus at 3 weeks, 6 weeks, whatever.
And like I said, you get into a zone where you're like, all right, night three, kinks are worked out or whatever. And then you just, you're in that non-thinking mode. You're on the same gear every night. It's a great feeling. And coming from the decade that we all come from, except Grant, we know that feeling. We know what it's like to get into that comfortable touring zone.
Right, right.
And so it's always something.
When you joined the band, was there anything about the songs? Were they a little tricky to learn, or were they pretty much what you expected? Because you bring a lot to the band, even from a vocal standpoint. There's a lot of harmonies in our band, mm-hmm. a lot of sort of that. Or was it just kind of like a figure them out and make them work?
Well, the cool thing for me was, because for so many years I played with a pick and I played with my fingers. But for the majority of the last 10 years, I would say, I mean, aside from Trickster, where I kind of play with both, but primarily, you know, my fingers have been doing the talking for the most part. Even just like cover gigs and other projects and stuff, it all called me to play with my fingers. So Fozzy kind of made me get back into, you know, get my right hand back in shape.
The pick. Now, why is that? Why do you have to play with a pick in Fozzy?
It's just the attack. It's the tone. You know, it's the attitude. It's everything. It just calls for it. In my opinion, there's a lot of some of the chugging, and you know, especially when you're just riding the eight, you know, you got to get that pick. And it was great for me to have to do that. You know, so now it's like I go from playing with Eric Martin, where I got to play Billy Sheehan parts with my fingers, and then coming to do, you know, some of this Fozzy stuff is tricky. Like for somebody, if I never played with a pick before, I would have a lot on my plate.
Right.
You know, luckily I kind of had some muscle memory.
Is it something like Sin and Bones or something?
Yeah, like Sin and Bones. And I always say the trickiest one, because I'm doing a lot of singing Wolves at Bay. Mm. That riff and singing that is the pat your head, you know, scratch your belly kind of thing. And I loved learning that, because I'm like, I love when I have to separate my brain.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's you feel like you're working. Mm-hmm. You know, I can learn a song in a second, but something like that, when you got to put work into it, it feels good once you get it down.
What I like too, and Billy, you might want to chime in on this, is that what I like that PJ brought to from what we do on a live stage is like, this is a, you know, a lifetime 30-year pro, great stage presence and chemistry and moves. And I know the move that you said Paul Stanley imitated, because you do it every night, the kind of the little twist.
The snake.
Yeah. Now, Billy, I wanted to ask you this, because the way that our stage is configured, and people might not even think about this, it's Rich to stage right, and it's drummer behind and Chris in the middle, and then you're always on the side, yes. Billy and bass player.
Yes.
What is it with PJ and on your side of the stage that you enjoy being there with him?
Actually, just, you know, pretty much everything is very comfortable, very pro. The pocket that's being laid down, the awesome vocals, and just stage interaction all together. I mean,
and knowing to stay out of each other's
way. Yeah, we've got that down to a science now.
Yeah, man,
it's just all of that rolled into one right there.
Here's why you should be getting Factor Meals. They're always delivered fresh, never frozen. They're chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and delicious. They're ready to eat in just 2 minutes. And if you go to factormeals.com/TIJ50 and use my promo code TIJ50, you'll get 50% off your first box and 20% off your next box. Plus, how good does this sound? Parmesan and sun-dried tomato chicken penne with roasted green beans. That's what I had last week before heading out to AEW. Factor makes eating delicious, quick, and easy, which is exactly what I need, especially on travel days. I ate it right out of the Factor packaging as well, so no cleanup afterwards. So you can customize your weekly meals with as much or as little as you need, and you can pause and reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. And Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. So head to factormeals.com/TIJ50 and use code TIJ50 to get 50% off your first month, plus 20% off your next month. That's code TIJ50 at factormeals.com/TIJ50 to get 50% off your first month, plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active. So then we go and do some touring. We're back on track. We had some great tours. Well, the first one was postponed 2 or 3 times, and that was a great tour. And then we went to the UK and our first ever sold-out tour. And then we realized that it's time to make a change on drums. Frank just isn't working out anymore. And then here we have Grant Brooks, who came to me. Grant toured in a band called Through Fire with us 3 different tours.
We toured in 2018. That was our first tour together. Yeah. We hit all over the U.S. And then we toured the past fall, right when COVID was just slowly letting
that was
up
the Iron Maiden tour, the quote-unquote Iron Maiden tour, right?
Well, was it after that? I
think no, that was September, last September.
Oh, so gotcha. Because I remember you coming up to me, maybe it was in September, and saying what PJ said, if you ever need somebody, let me know. I remember, like, when you're on tour and you see guys, hey, what's up with that? But talk, it was like, who's this guy? Sounds like Gomer Pyle, man. He's got it. But I was like, I always take that and put it in my back pocket because I think it's great. Like, if you ever need somebody, let me know. Because in this business, you never know when you might need somebody. So that stood out to me. And I thought, that's interesting. That takes a lot of balls for somebody to say that, you know?
Right.
What was your reasoning for asking that question?
Well, touring with you guys like I did all throughout 2018 and just seeing the stage presence, the music, and what all y'all brought to the table, I was like, I don't know what it's going to take, but I want to be behind the kit for Fozzy. Like, whatever it takes. And I remember, I think we was halfway through the tour. I can't remember where it was at, but I went up to Rich and I was like, we talked for like a good 30 minutes. And I told him the same thing. I was like, if you ever need a drummer, hit me up, let me know. And
well, and that's what happened. Do you remember that, Rich, when he said that to you? What did you think when he asked you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember him saying that. The only reason I don't is just because those are the kind of casual conversations that you have with friends. It's like, right. Hey man, you ever find a tight spot, man, you need a guy, give me a buzz. And I've said that to other people too, but I always say it, and I'm not going to join your band, but if you ever need a guy to fill in, I'm happy to come and be your guy, because we're friends and whatever. So I don't remember that, but I do remember our friends in the Stir, who are now Like Machines, were looking for a drummer. And Tanner, the band leader, reached out to me and said, do you know any drummers? I said, absolutely. There's the best drummer I know, lives in outside of Tupelo, Mississippi. He's a guy named Grant Brooks. And I hooked Grant up with Tanner.
Wow.
Yeah. I got them talking. And when I called Grant to tell him about Like Machines, he goes, oh, man, I was hoping you were calling to ask me about Fozzy.
Sure was.
Yeah. Here's what he said. And then it didn't work out with Like Machines, because Like Machines was looking for someone locally in Atlanta.
Right.
So it didn't work out. But then when we had the need to look for somebody, I remember we were on the bus in England, and I said, I think we should really consider Grant, mainly because of his attitude. Because we can always audition and find out if he can play the parts, but the most important part that everyone needs to know is, do you want to sit at base camp too and boil water with Sherpas, or do you want to go to the freaking summit? Grant's a summit kind of guy. Yeah. I don't want to hang out with base camp too and boil water guys. I do not. Only people that want to go risk freaking life and limb frostbite to get to that top and take that picture with those flags. Those are the only people that I want to be associated with. And I knew Grant was a summit guy. Mm. And because you just, every one of us, our parents have said, you got to have a backup plan. Like, no parent in their rightful mind would send their child out and say, go be a rock star. You'll have no problems. It's super easy. Everybody's doing it. It's like, this is rare air.
Yeah.
You want to make records? You want to go on tour? You want to? This is something that talent has so little to do with it. It is all about what are you willing to do? It's Sean Connery in, what was that movie? With Elliot Ness?
Oh, yeah, The Untouchables.
The Untouchables. What are you willing to do?
What was Peter Criss's thing? Drummer willing to do anything to make it.
Yeah.
That was his ad, that Gene and Paul, willing to do anything to make it, right? So when we decided to make the change in drumming, and obviously, listen, bass is very important, but bass is part of the front line. You're only as good in a rock and roll band as your drummer. I think we can all agree upon that.
Agreed.
So we had a very short list, and then it was up to you to decide who we should use. And you and I had some conversations. I always look at it from imaging and from personality, and then you do too. But then you have to do the next step of, can the guys play the part? Because like PJ said, these are some very deceptively intricate songs that aren't easy to do, especially to lock in with you.
Yeah, and that was, so I jammed with Grant and I jammed with one other guy.
Yeah.
And very different styles, very different skill sets, but the real thing that was the deal maker for me with Grant is the summit, is that I'll do whatever it takes.
Yeah.
He lives 3.5 hours away from where our rehearsal space is. I'll drive every day. I'll come up there. I'll relocate. I'll do whatever it takes.
Doesn't ask for gas money.
No, doesn't ask for anything.
Yeah.
Just says, this is what I want to do. And you know what? We can work. I knew his base level skills were there. All you have to do is just, it's like a basketball player who played for another team for a long time. You just have to teach him your style.
Yeah.
He has to work into your format. And I knew he had the ability to. We just had to work. So we did.
In together.
Yeah, we did. I told Grant at the very beginning, we are saying the same words, but we're saying them in a different language. But you have to speak our language. We ain't coming over to your language. Yeah. You have to learn how to speak like Fozzie. So we're just going to have to go through boot camp, and we're going to learn it. And we're going to reprogram you to think the way that we think. Because if I was to join his old band Through Fire, then I got to learn their style. Yeah, I got to learn their system. And he did. He did whatever it took.
And my thing was, we were texting, how's Grant doing? How do you do? My thing, too, I was like, dude, like we wanted somebody, a younger attitude, you know what I mean? And I remember saying, dude, he plays without his shirt. Like, that's what I like. I don't ever want to see him wearing a shirt ever on stage, because how many guys don't wear Nike. Shirts on stage in this day and age? Nike, you know what I mean? And to me, I was like, this is the guy. As long as he can come within the ballpark of drumming that you can help with the rest, that's the guy. And that's why you're here, from all those elements.
Very happy to be here.
What did you think when you finally got the call of getting in the band?
Well, I still remember the call. When he first called me, it was the day after Thanksgiving to learn the songs, come down. I remember I was putting in 6 or 7 hours every day, just playing. We jammed, and then I realized what I had to do. Went back and did it. And, you know, all I could think about was like, man, I hope I get this. I hope I get the part, put in a lot of work. He called, and I was like, I got to call my dad, like, because, you know, it was just so exciting. It was super exciting.
Didn't I call you, too, and tell you, or who called?
You called,
right? Yeah.
Yeah, you called me, and I was like, I got to call my dad instantly, because he's been with me since the start, since I was 13.
Since you were born.
Yeah, pushing me. Well, of course, but when I got in the music career, pushed me from day one, harder than anyone.
That's great. PJ, obviously, you've been in a lot of bands. What did you think when you got the gig?
Cool. Yeah, I got some time here. Let me squeeze you in on a Monday afternoon. No, I was excited again, getting into that mode and you know, fire. It's great because this band dictates when it wants to go out on tour, how it wants to go on tour. You know, it's a great schedule.
Yeah,
it's, you know.
No, but we've worked hard. Like that's a whole other podcast of what we've built to be able to do this and make it very viable.
Yeah.
So it does work out, you know, and you don't have to worry about being away from home.
But also, I mean, getting back to your point, I mean, because I was a little bit in the dark with all of Fozzie's category until you called me. You know, I knew the songs on the radio and stuff like that, but I never did really the deep dive on it until you called me to fill in. You guys called me that day, and I was like, all right, cool, let me check out these songs. And I was like, wow, this is killer. Like, I just didn't know what to expect other than, you know, the couple of songs I'd heard on the radio. And I think maybe you sent me the set list, and I listened to those songs alone. And I was like, wow, this is, I mean, really fun.
Yeah, fun, a little fun, challenging. But
everything.
Places to rock.
Yeah.
Really quick, I always wanted to say, I just, for people who are listening to us all kind of have this fun little love party, you would be surprised, all of you, how many bands are not friends and don't like each other and are in bands and go on stage frustrated with internal personality conflicts. And there is nothing worse. Imagine going to work every day with people that you're not in love with, working with, and then you have to live with them. And then you shower next to them and you hear them snoring, and you are connected with these people spiritually, emotionally,
creatively,
financially. And this is the most complete that this band has ever been of any drama, any weirdness.
Yeah.
The band likes each other. Yeah. When we look at each other on stage, it's like, oh, these are my friends. These are my family members. And that means a lot. Over the years, we've toured with bands where band members don't even travel together. Mm-hmm. But they for the sake of the band, the company, the corporation, the whatever that is, they still show up together and play the gig. But there's something special about a band who is a real family. And I don't mean fighting brothers. I mean a band who actually goes to has dinner together
and enjoys
each other's company. There's not enough value placed on that, I think.
We've been on tours on bus shares where the other band were actually in fist fights two separate times. Why would you ever want to be in a business relationship with somebody you're punching in the face on the bus at night? But anyways, that's neither here nor there, because like you said, Rich, this is a very tight family unit. Grant and PJ fit right in. Billy's been here for 20 years, and we've been here from the start. And I think, once again, this is the third best record we've ever done, which I love saying in radio interviews and watching people's reactions to see, are you really paying attention to what I'm saying? And if they don't react to that, I'm like, okay, they're not paying attention to what I'm saying. I think this is one of our best records, if not our best. It's called Boombox. Before we get into just talking about the songs, I get asked quite a bit in all the interviews I've been doing about the title of Boombox. And I remember, and once again, it could have been you, could have been me, of us discussing our record titles don't fit the vibe of the band on stage. We have a very fun, energetic, good time Van Halen 1981 vibe on stage. But yet our albums are called Sin and Bones and Do You Want to Start a War and All That Remains and Judas. We discussed about having something that was a little bit more, for lack of a better term, party, good time vibe.
This was your concept. Okay. You said to me, this record is super dark. The lyrics are digging deep in the darkest crevices of humanity. We have got to counterbalance it with something that feels fun, with something that really marries the other part of us, which is our live delivery.
Yeah.
And you were like, listen, like we are a schizophrenic band. We write these dark, haunting songs, and at the same time, they're delivered in a way that feels okay about it. There's like this such a party atmosphere. We need a title. And I remember that was one of the ideas I had for a cover band idea was Boombox. And I thought, and I asked you about it. What do you think about it? Because anytime I think of Boombox, I think, man, like back to the glory days of the late 70s and early 80s. That's how we all listened to music. Everybody had a boombox that we put your favorite mix cassette in, and we all hung out, whether it's by the lake or at school on the bus, and we all listened to our boombox of all of our favorite songs, and it felt right. And I remember you immediately liked the idea and then expanded on it.
Because I've been saying, like, if people know what a boombox is from our generation, probably 40 and over, then you know it equates with a good time and your younger years. And like, I remember my mom's stereo was broken for months, and we had the boombox was the stereo of the car, which was great because before you had portable takeout stereo, you just take the boombox with you. We also used to call it a ghetto blaster. Mm-hmm. If you don't know what a boombox is, it sounds cool. It sounds like a beatbox, which people know. And it also, we are, as a band, a modern day boombox. We make booming sounds, and collectively the band is the box of sound. It's the boombox. So that's a little bit deep, but to me, I think that fits. Grant, have you ever heard of a boombox before?
I have, but never seen one much.
Now, how old are you, Grant?
I'm 27.
27. You fit in, just you're a great guy, and you fit right in. You're an old soul, which counts as well. But so we came up with the idea of the boombox, loved it. I think we discussed, let's have a boombox on fire, whatever it may be. And then I remember I just thought, what if we put a boombox on fire in the middle of Blade Runner? That's what the idea came from.
Yeah, I did a Google search for boombox on fire and found a photograph, sent it to you, and then you said, we got to put this in a virtual environment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not a photograph.
Right.
And then you collaborated with your artist. And you guys.
I collaborated with a couple guys that didn't even come close to getting
I remember that
one
now.
One guy was so bad. I was like, what is wrong with this guy? And that's why I went back to Abdul Malik, who I always work with. And I figured at least he speaks my language. Like you mentioned, speaking Fozzy's language. He speaks Jericho's language of what I'm saying to him. And it took a while, but I think the cover is a color. The colors are great. The imagery is great. The little Easter eggs in the back, if you find them, are great. What do you guys think of the cover?
Yeah, it's colorful, vibrant, exciting. You know, it's all that. It's basically
like a Love Boat,
yeah. Right?
You said it sounds like somebody describing a meal. Yeah.
Billy, what do you think?
It's delightful.
I think it's. I like the description. It's colorful, but it's also modern. You know, yeah. Fire's always cool. You know, fire. You know, fire. You can't go wrong with fire.
Yeah. I agree with Billy. You can't go wrong with fire. That, I mean, it's just so different. Well, Love it.
The thing about it too that's cool is, you know, our other records, the last two, Judas and Do You Want a Sword of War, are very minimalist, and they're also the same color. You know, they're kind of that beigey with the bomb on the one, and then just the chick with the knife behind her back. So I thought, let's go the opposite direction, just make it super colorful. Yep. It's going to be a bitch to sign, but, you know, we'll worry about that when it happens. And then the last thing, which I just found out, is apparently Green Day has a record with the Boombox and Fire. We knew nothing about that. So, Billy Joe, don't you even try and send your guys after us, because we had no idea. And plus, ours has Blade Runner, Tokyo, rain-soaked neon signs behind it. So that's the difference.
Ding, 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 ding,
ding, ding, ding, ding. I have to say a quick thank you to Pretty Litter because it's been so peaceful at my house lately. Nobody's fighting over cleaning the litter boxes, and nobody's complaining about how bad it smells where we keep the litter boxes. Pretty Litter's altered absorbent crystals trap odor instantly, and the crystals last up to a month, so less scooping out of the box. And best part, Pretty Litter changes colors to help monitor early signs of potential illness in our cats, including urinary tract infections and kidney issues. It ships right to our door, so no last-minute trips to the store. When we realize we're all out of cat litter, it's a win-win for my family, and it's a win-win for Mr. Mittens, Indy, and Snickers, my three cats. You and your cat or cats are going to love Pretty Litter as much as we do. It helps keep tabs on your cat's health and keeps odors down. Go to prettylitter.com/Jericho and use the code Jericho to save 20% on your first order. That's prettylitter.com/Jericho, code Jericho to save 20%. prettylitter.com/Jericho, code Jericho. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details. So let's talk about the songs, and we don't have to get into crazy detail, but I want to kind of do a track by track for your thoughts on the song, your feelings on it. Opening track is Sane, and this is one of the ones like Judas, not the one, this is like Judas, and at the moment I heard it, I said this has to be the opening song on the record and the opening song in the set. Where'd you come up with that concept and idea?
Well, I wrote the whole song minus lyrics and melodies and had it ready to go. And that was the, you know, again, that was my technique was, okay, we're looking at a deadline. So let me just present some completed ideas, which I articulated earlier, which is against the law. But luckily that one snuck through. Johnny loved it, thought it was a fantastic riff, sent it immediately to you for approval. And then Johnny and I started working on...
But I came back with something, though, because I remember it had a lot of stops and starts in it.
Correct.
I said, this riff is an opener, but the song, I can't work it like this. And you guys talked about it. And then you came back with the current version, which is amazing with that Alex Lifeson-esque Rush solo and all that stuff. Do you remember that?
Yeah, like, of course.
You guys rearranged it.
Yeah, well, that was always your beef with Johnny's arrangements,
right,
was that he loves to do these pop arrangements where he really breaks down in the verses and takes away the drum beat and just takes it just so that it focuses on the vocal. And you're like, we're a rock and roll band. Can we keep the band playing? Like, and that was your big argument with Johnny, because he loves to make the chorus seem massive by stripping the verses down. And you, I think rightfully, was arguing for, in rock and roll and heavy rock, especially the stuff that we grew up on, the verses were equally as important in keeping the band heavy and keeping the riffs going.
Yeah, and there's a place for that. I just thought for this song, if we're going to use it as an opener, let's make it just a barn burner all the way throughout. And it turned out that way. Did a great video for that song on the roller coaster. It was very hard on all of us. Billy, what'd you think of the roller coaster video?
Well, you know, it was definitely my last time ever being on roller coasters. And, you know, it was a truly an experience, but it was an awesome idea and next level idea that no one's done before. And glad I survived it.
What do you think of it as an opening song?
Oh, I love opening. Oh, dude, I love opening our show with that. It's like, it's just like the biggest burst of energy with the groove and riff and just everything about it. The
kick-ass chorus, big chorus, melody. I love it, dude. It's awesome.
It is a unique song when you think about the fact that the bridge section is very unlike what modern bands or even classic bands are doing. It has a really unique, and it also is cool because the chorus lyric is just a declarative sign. Yeah.
Yes.
Riff. Yeah. And in the classic Fozzy fashion, it's hook A, hook B, hook C.
The triple hook, right? Yes. The Def Leppard triple hook, right? Song number two, I Still Burn, which is currently on the radio. And it's our quickest charting top 25 single ever and our sixth consecutive top 25 single. Stats.
Stats. It's a good one, too.
Yeah, yeah. Now, people ask me all the time because they still assume that I write the lyrics. And like we said, it really doesn't make a difference either way. But I sing them. So they ask me, is it about me? According to Johnny, it was kind of about me, right? Johnny wrote those lyrics, but based it on my career, right?
Correct.
Or what he thought that it was.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. As if you were writing a biography for somebody else. Mm-hmm. You know, and he knows you. He's obviously
worked together for years.
Yes. And knows me. Yeah. So because he wanted you to have your song. Kiss doesn't sing, "We want to rock and roll all night." Kiss sings, "I want." It's important for the lead singer to tell his or her story. Mm-hmm. You know, it should never be from the band's perspective. "We rock" is not as good as I rock. Yes. And I think that's why Johnny felt strong about it. And Johnny never told you, because I think he just assumed that you would read the lyrics and go, "Oh, this kind of reminds me." But your point was that, yeah, I mean, I could see where it would fit me, but it also could fit anybody, because these are common experiences and stories that we all share.
Yeah, and this one right out of the gate, we were thinking this one has a chance to be the elusive, you know, elusive number one or whatever you might want to call it. But I remember thinking, to me, the reason why it's going to work is, I don't know, we've been very careful about marrying wrestling with Fozzy. I think we can get away with it more now because Fozzy has grown to its own entity, but I thought this is everybody's story who's ever had a goal and a dream. You know, every time I'm at my end, I get up again. And I think we can all relate to that the same way that I think everyone could relate to Judas, but in a darker way. Everyone I've ever loved, I pushed them all away. And everyone knows what it's like to make the wrong decision, even though you know you're making the wrong decision. And Judas was a monster because of that. I think I Still Burn as the same concept, but in a positive way for the having a dream and reaching out and going for it. Any thoughts on that, PJ, on I Still Burn?
Yeah, I mean, obviously when I first heard it and was learning the lyrics, I thought, I know what this is about. Mm. You know, I figured it was about you and, you know, your career. But I see your point, too. I mean, it very well could be about anybody.
Right.
Universal.
But
universal,
it's definitely pertaining to you. And I think it's he really nailed it.
He really did, because I didn't write any of those lyrics, and they really do feel like me. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Every time I sing the line, "Lost some or watched some good friends gone too soon," I always think of Eddie Guerrero, which is crazy because his daughter Shawl is in the video for I Still Burn, and I really had nothing to do with it. I didn't even think about it. That was you and Willis that thought about using the Vaudettes, because we had them on the cruise a couple times.
Yep. Yeah, it's always great when you can connect with your lyrics. Yeah. You know, yeah. I mean, you know, again, Geddy Lee did a fantastic job because he is lifelong buddies and partners with Neil Peart writing lyrics. So Neil is writing lyrics knowing that his partner is going to sing them.
Right.
He's not writing them for somebody else to sing them.
Yeah,
and so this was specifically tailored for you, not for Johnny to sing, not for Rich Ward or PJ to sing, but for you to sing.
Right.
And that's important because when you're in a collaborative effort, we're all thinking of each other. I mean, and all the records you and I have made together, there's never one time I ever thought of any melody that I wrote where I wasn't thinking, is this something that would be perfect for you?
Right.
Like, you know, that's the way it is. And if you're writing a song, you have to think in terms of, can Rich play this? Is this his style? Is this Fozzy? Because this is a band. You don't just bring in an idea because you like it. Mm. It has to be something that works for us.
We've done that in the past, but now with the Johnny Anders, I mean, we have learned from him. I would never bring in another, you know, Wormwood or Storm the Beaches. Or we've got a 15-minute song here, Rich. One thing that's very cool that I wanted to just bring up is that Judas went gold, an actual gold album, 500,000 units sold. And just quickly,
I think it's very cool that PJ got a gold record in 2022 and got a gold record in 1992. 30 years.
91. Yep.
But 31 years between gold records.
Right, and we had the presentation in New York on April 11th, and I was presented with my first gold record at the Meadowlands Arena on April 18th, 1991. So 31 years almost to the day. In between, wow.
That's almost.
I'm going to try to shorten that gap up, though. Let me tell you,
it's almost like a guy who has a kid when he's 19, then has a kid when he's 49.
Right.
Grant, I remember they asked Robert Trujillo when they did MTV Icons in 2003, and the interviewer was like, "You've been in the band for 5 minutes, and you're already an MTV icon.
A millionaire. Too.
You've been in the band for 5 minutes, and you already have a gold record. What is that?"
I know. I remember we was in New York. He's like, "Grant's been in the band for 2 weeks, and he's already got a gold record."
How was that for you, though?
It's incredible.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Like, just being a part of that. I never thought, being from Mississippi, you know, being a band with a gold record. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, nobody from Mississippi's ever had a gold record.
Other than Elvis. Elvis.
He's the only one. He got them all.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Wash your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts.
The third track, Purifier, one of my favorite songs on the record, and one of my favorite songs in the set. It's just a, I remember when Johnny sent it to me, he goes, "This one is a banger, as the kids say."
Yeah.
Johnny was begging me. He wanted me to write a song that's got like a swing riff, like Too Young to Fall in Love by Motley Crue. And I kept trying to write something that had that type, not those notes, but that feel to it. And I never did come up with that riff, but I did come up with something that had the similar kind of riff to Looks That Kill.
Yeah.
And I was like, how does this feel? It's different feel, same band.
Different song.
Yeah.
I don't have Too Young to Fall in Love, but I do have this.
Yeah. Because he, you know, that's the one thing is like anytime that you're, because Johnny had lyrics. And again, when you're in a collaborative environment, somebody has a concept and they are asking of you to bring this to the table to do this. And it's difficult because when you're writing in a group, you're not just writing for your own taste. You're writing for a band. And it's not a solo project. We're all working together. And when I came up with that riff, I was like, oh, yeah, this is. And PJ, you said, what did that riff remind you of? I forgot what it was.
It's got a little White Zombie kind of.
Yes,
zombie.
It does. It absolutely does.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
It's a four on the floor thing. Yeah,
that's a good point.
It's a real headbang.
Chunky.
Yes.
It's
now, the one last little thing about that is the intro for that song was originally Paul Harvey?
It was Paul Harvey, yeah.
You took a little snippet from Paul Harvey's a famous talk radio host. And then what was the story with that?
His estate wouldn't give us permission to use it.
And what was he saying? Do you recall?
He was just talking. It was kind of apocalyptic. Yeah, you know, yeah. It was him telling a story about the changing times.
Right.
And it worked really well. And, well, then at the last minute, we couldn't use it, and Johnny asked you.
Well, no, I said, because I remember saying, Willis, like, we can't use it. We're just going to send it with the. And I said, well, dude, let me just do it. And he's like, what are you going to say? And I just Googled Purify Bible. And the Christians listening are going to kill me. I don't remember what the verse was. But I just found this wicked verse about purifying yourself and cleansing wash your hands clean and purify yourself. So I said, do you like this? And you said you liked it. And I said, and Johnny liked it. And I said, well, just distort my voice like there's Motley Crue again, like in the beginning, at the beginning of Shadow of the Devil.
Yeah.
I said, just distort it so it sounds kind of really demonic and weird. And I sent it to him. I said, but we need it like in an hour. And he sent it back in like 10 minutes. He's like, that's great. Let's put that on there. And that worked out perfect.
Perfect.
So another song that I'm getting asked about when I've been doing press for this record is Army of One. This record to me is the tale of two cities, because there's the six songs we've been playing live for months and even years at this point, and there's the six songs that nobody has heard yet, and Army of One is one of those songs. To me, once again, we've done a couple ballads in the past, but this one, I don't know if Five Finger Death Punch is the right call for it, but it sounds like something you would hear on the radio by a band like that that has, you know, a dozen top 10 Shinedown maybe. But once again, it's Fozzy's style. But that one to me is when I was kind of picking the singles in my head, it was, no pun intended, because that's the lyric of the song, but it was Sane, and then I Still Burn, and then Army of One.
Yeah, so Johnny had Army of One that he had collaborated with the same gentleman that he collaborated with Judas.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Justin?
Yes.
Okay.
From We As Human.
From the same time frame.
Justin
Cordell.
Correct.
Gotcha.
And this song existed, and Johnny said, they are never going to use this song. It's incomplete, but it is a fantastic beginning. And, you know, asked, what do you guys think? And I said, man, I think this would be a fantastic song. So we started to dig into it, and Johnny had a real vision for it, and that was bringing in real strings, you know, making this a real centerpiece song, a real standout track on the album.
Well, and it definitely is. And it's a singer song too. I mean, I'm assuming we'll probably play it live at some point, but to me, it's going to be one of those ones that everyone takes out their cigarette lighter apps and waves them. We went to Journey last week. The whole place had the cell phone lighter on it. Another thing too, that I really was going to mention, that when we went to London this year, and I had some health issues and I couldn't perform, we did the listening party, and it was amazing because it was like 800 fans, and they sat there and listened to the whole record, and they were into every song. And that was kind of the litmus test. I remember Army of One was the ones that were just, they were waving
there.
And these are people that have never heard the song before. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's when you know you always have something special. Ugly on the Inside. I remember when I first heard this one, I was thinking, oh, that's going to be our first number one song. Now it's almost got the Lazarus effect, where Lazarus is a song from our All That Remains album that when you first played it, I was like, oh, this is it. This is the single. And then we never, ever played it live and really cared once it was all done. I felt the same about Ugly on the Inside. I thought the chorus was great, and I thought this is going to be a big one for us. It didn't even make the cut to get even in contention for a single.
I still am confused about it, because
I am too.
This song is so unique, and your voice is just different on the track, and it makes you hit a different register and a different tonal quality that I think people need to hear, and it makes it unique for the band. And it's a great,
because we even got a treatment that we were working on for a video
with Damian Leone.
Yes.
We did the Terrifier movies.
Yes. I mean, and we were moving forward with that.
Yeah.
Pre-pandemic.
But I remember it was the classic Sony Records going, what else you got?
Yeah. And I was like,
I was crushed.
I was too.
Because the other one was My Great Wall. It was like, we sent those two, and these are both great. What else you got? Which I'm sure, as one of the guys who wrote those songs, is probably pretty, pretty disheartening.
Yeah, I didn't get it, because I thought Ugly on the Inside was such a no-brainer. It had every component to be just a fantastic song to use for a video. It's different enough, but it has 10,000 hooks and sing-alongs, and it's
cheerleader.
Just,
but it's got a novel, not a novelty effect, but it's got the kind of a chant.
I was thinking live is going to go over great, but you know, and once again, this is something that I said earlier today on whatever interview I did. It sucks, but when you're in the big leagues, you know, Sony is as big as it gets. As long as they have a plan, then I'm fine. And they had a plan with some of these other ideas and songs, whatever. But I still think that one, you know, we'll just have to Fear of the Dark it and put it in the live set and just make it a hit.
We should.
Yeah.
We absolutely should, because that song deserves
it's due.
Absolutely.
Even though we thought Lazarus did in the early stages on the album. We didn't maybe
we knew but, after it wasn't one. Yeah,
correct. Whereas Ugly, I think, is just one of these songs that it's
even
like
the title is better. I mean, Lazarus. I think the title took it out of category.
This is back when we were Dungeons and Dragons,
right? So you didn't have a it didn't stand a chance.
Yeah. Ugly. Dio on one shoulder and Bruce Dickinson on the other.
But yeah, I agree with you on that. And the thing too about the song is, like, I just remember thinking they're going to just be chanting this and it's going to be great. But, you know, like I said, it's in our hands. It's the same thing we did with Elevator, where I think that could have been a big single. We played it live and then it ran its course. But as a single, I think that one kind of got lost in the shuffle. But anyways, I remember Matt Walsh from 3 Days Grace, who actually came up with the original concept, was like, dude, I gave you the song. It's not even a single. I said, it's not our choice. I'm sorry, Matt. You can cover it and make it a number one and give us the royalties for it right back on it, though. And then the end of side one, and we did put a lot of time into the sequencing of the record, because even though a lot of people just listened to songs on shuffle and one at a time, we all still like the concept of an album that takes you on a musical journey, not to sound too pretentious, but it starts at the first song, Battery, and it goes all the way to Damage Incorporated and takes you all in and out through, you know, out the whole thing. So Relax, the end of the proverbial side one. I think this basically started because you were doing it with Guardians, but we also did it on, or did we do it on the Jericho
first?
On the second cruise.
No, we did it on the cruise because the Guardians did. And I, that was when,
started,
that you were like, hey, we got to do a cover set. What are some suggestions that you guys do in Guardians? Because Frank and I already knew them. So it would be easier for us to kind of pull them into the set. Because that's a lot of material, because Fozzy on the Jericho Cruise plays three sets.
Yes.
A lot of material. So the idea is, how many songs do we already kind of have in the family?
In the wheelhouse, yeah.
And when I suggested that to you, you're like, oh, yeah, that's just a no-brainer. And then we played it one night, and you're like, oh, this is...
You remember that night we played it?
Oh, yeah, dude. Definitely.
It's a killer.
Love the...
Oh, the vibe of that song, Relax. That's my favorite cover we've done.
Right on.
I love that one. I absolutely love
it. Well, I agree with you, because it's almost got an industrial feel to it.
Yes.
A Rammstein
thing
to it.
It's like Rammstein,
But what... I knew it would go over live, but it goes over live. It's one of the highlights of the set, of that one part where you say, go fucking crazy.
Dude, that's awesome.
We posted it on Instagram last night, if you guys want to see the clip with the new lights and the new production and the smoke going off behind the steam. It's almost very apocalyptic. Just, you know, it's like a funeral dirge.
Yeah, it is an incredible choice for us. And it was, and Johnny, that's the other thing, is it passed the Johnny Andrews litmus test on.
Yeah.
We've had many suggestions that he was like, yeah, well, let's think about that. And which means it's never going to happen.
Like my idea of doing a guitar saxophone duel.
Yeah.
He didn't like that idea. It was going to be with Kenny G, and this is not a joke. I thought Kenny G and Rich Ward can do like a John Petrucci, Jordan Rudess thing and come up with something together and play some cool stuff. And then we were going to do Baker Street and have him play on that. And Kenny wasn't too into that. And I think Johnny was just like, what the fuck is this guy talking about?
Yeah, I don't want Kenny G on my record. Yeah.
tell him to call me when he's not in Kenny G's house.
Yeah.
Someday I'll do it. Nowhere to Run, we've discussed. A great tune and made it to the top 10. That kicks off the next side. My Great Wall was another one that when I first heard it, I even was reading the email because I was trying to find it today. And I said, it reminds me of something. I'm not going to tell you what it reminds me of, but it doesn't matter, but I love it. When I first heard it, it reminded me, and no one's going to know what this means, but it means a lot if you're a Halloween fan, of an Andy Daris Halloween song. And Andy Daris is the singer who's with Michael Kiske now, but he writes all of the almost pop metal tunes that Halloween does. And this, to me, was like, it's a great heavy tune with a real pop element to it.
Yeah, I mean, that was another one of those. Johnny had an idea, which was My Great Wall. He loved that idea, similar to the concept of the wall, you know, the Roger Waters, you know, like creating this barrier between you and the rest of the world because you just can't find a place where you connect anymore with humanity.
Yeah.
And another like, oh God, songs to kill yourself to.
Yeah.
But it was a great idea. And then it was just a matter of that the first few songs that Johnny and I wrote was that process of he and I sitting in a room together with a guitar and a keyboard and staring at each other and having dueling. What do you think about this? I don't know. well, what do you think about this? Like, we just go back and forth. You know, it's like the two old guys in the Muppet Show just telling each other their ideas are terrible until we can agree on one.
George and Jerry are trying to write the script. Okay, I walk in and say hi. And I say hello. That's great. Write it down. Write it down.
We need something here.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the process. It's so hard. Yeah. It's always better to come in with some ideas than it is to just sit there and stare at each other like poker players. Like, you're like, should I give him my best ideas now?
What hell is like, and that's one of those ones, like, you record a record, you put it away for a while, and then you kind of forget about some of it. And I remember in London when I heard that one, I was like, holy smokes, this song is pretty freaking heavy.
Yeah, this song, this isn't, you know, certain songs have a put it late in the record kind of feel, but that doesn't.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think none of those ones do. I know this is one of,
none of them
one
do.
Of your favorites, I think, Rich.
Yeah, that riff is freaking crazy. Yeah, it's a great riff, and it's also... It's
difficult, too.
It's very difficult. It's a super technical part, and then breaking down into that verse is just... It's a really interesting song. Again, these songs are amongst our best because we allowed time for the soup to sit on the stove.
Yeah.
And we went back to it, revision 1, 2, and 3, listening to these things, carefully crafting them, building them into these little stories. And again, Johnny sitting at the helm of the lyrics and asking me to kind of write these sonic soundscapes to them. And it was great because we were sending material to you for input. What do you think about this? And you making changes, sending your ideas back and forth. You know, you live in Tampa and Johnny and I are working in Atlanta, but we still communicate. Yeah, we're still able to bounce ideas back and forth.
I'm the Rick Rubin of that process. I just move this here and play that double. And they're like, yeah, whatever. I usually don't say much at that point unless I really feel strongly, which is why if I say something, you know, like the same
100%.
Example, you know. Curious as to the story behind Omen. Omen to me is another one that was, it's a really cool song. It was fun to sing. When I heard it, I thought a little bit Disturbed, maybe. Not Disturbed a feeling, but the band. Kind of, where did that come from?
Johnny wrote the guitar line on keyboard. I was like, we're not doing that. I'll play it on guitar. Yeah, like, you know, like, it was one of those ideas where it was going to be a synthy low part. And I was like, let's just play it on guitar. And then I remember... For this record, because Judas was reacting well at radio, I was starting to get some mailbox money. Like, and when the mailbox money would come in, I'd go on eBay and buy a bunch of pedals. And I was, because I was wanting, it's like for anyone, it's having the most amount of crayons, you can create the most amount of colors.
Of course.
And so I bought so many pedals. I mean, I'm not even kidding when I say I probably bought 75, 100 pedals for this album.
Jeez. Yeah. You're like Edge.
Yeah, I went nuts because they all do a different thing. I was buying new ones and old ones and trying different things. And that was why some of these songs, like when you listen to the guitars on Omen or you listen to the Ugly on the Inside, all those creepy sounds and stuff, I was creating them and just, I will never recreate them because they're all these analog pedals with these big, and I was taking pictures of the pedals, the settings, so I would try to remember what they were.
But I'm sure they used to do that in the 70s, probably, take an actual camera and take
a picture. Yeah, they had to, a Polaroid or something.
Diagrams.
Yeah, yes. Right.
That's exactly right, diagrams, yes. But yeah, that was the whole idea, was trying to create on guitar what was happening lyrically with these creepy and disturbed moments.
I'm a huge fan of the Omen movies, so I'm automatically assuming that Johnny watched Omen one night with Damien Thorne and wrote it about it. I don't know if he did or not, but that's, once again, I have to internalize the singing. I just love, the more I learn, the less I trust. This is the end of times, isn't it obvious? And it's just like, ooh, that's creepy. And then it's, this is an omen, dun 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 dun. It's a great tune. You know, that you kind of, like I said, with all these other songs, I kind of don't even rate it until you hear it. And you're like, holy shit, that's killer.
Yeah, we got so lucky on this record in that the B-sides could easily have been on the A-sides.
It does. It doesn't feel like you're getting deep into the record.
Right. It's almost like, and once again, we mentioned Def Leppard twice, this really does have a hysteria feel to it. And what I mean by that, or Appetite, in that there's really no songs, there may be two songs on either record that maybe couldn't be singles and 10 that could be. And you can only have so many singles. But then this is one of them. The Worst Is Yet to Come. That opening riff and the... really, really such know a great who groove. I am. Another just great chorus. And the funny thing is, I don't know if Johnny knows anything about my wrestling career, but that was the thing that I said to Shawn Michaels before I famously threw him into the Jericho-tron 5000, the obscenely expensive Jericho-tron 5000. I kicked him in the balls and I picked him up and I said, the worst is yet to come. And I threw him through it. So when Johnny sent me that, I was like, do you know anything about this? He goes, what do you mean? I said, never mind. You know, this is one of those catchphrases of mine. Everyone's going to think that I wrote it about me, but that's, I sang it because that came from me.
When Johnny told me about his concept for the song, I was so in love with it because it's basically a relationship song about girls who like bad boys and guys who like bad girls and who are attracted to that because they like the danger involved. Yeah. And it's the bad guy or the bad girl turning to them and going, oh, you think it's bad now. The worst is yet to come. It's like you, it's basically like that, the pinhead, you know, it's like, oh, and to think I hesitated.
Yeah.
It's that whole like Hellraiser thing of like, oh my God, I, you know, the ecstasy, but the dark side of getting caught up in one of those kind of bad boy, bad girl relationships. Yeah.
Isn't that right, Johnny Depp?
And then the final song on the record, which is a showcase for Billy Gray, the Vulture Club, which was great because at first I was like, it doesn't need a just call it Vulture Club. And I remember Rich was like, no, it's the Vulture Club. Get it? And I'm like, oh, like the Culture Club, but it's the evil version.
Yes. I was so heartbreaking. Don't take away the, it's the, like,
the Vulture Club, yeah. But once again, in the fine tradition of ending the album with a very heavy song, Wolves at Bay, Witchery, those Born of Anger, it just felt like this has to be the last song on the record.
And I wrote that original, okay. And then I fell out of love with that riff, and I tried changing it for months.
Oh, wow.
I kept sending Johnny new versions of it. He's like, nope, that's the
that's
riff.
That's great, because Johnny's not the most... biggest fan of super heavy music, so he must have known that one.
He
was
loved
the one.
It because it was sacral. It was just.
It's a ward riff with no f***ing around.
That's, you know, exactly, I mean? Right. He's like, it doesn't need to be more technical, more complicated. Because I kept trying to make it a little more, you know, I was trying to give it a little bit more kind of fanciness to it, or highfalutin,
yeah.
You know. And he was like, no, he was right.
And then Billy plays the solo on that.
Yes.
And the cool thing is, when Wolves at Bay, you guys traded solos. So I thought that you guys did the same. And I was like, which one of these is Rich? Because neither one of them sounds like Rich. Which one did he do? And it's because you did the whole
eight bars
or whatever, yes. 16 bars or whatever it is.
Yes.
What was the mindset in that? Because you had traded off in the past.
Yeah, well, I was like, I wanted to give Billy a long solo. We didn't have any. All the solos on the record, except the Vulture Club, are pretty quick ones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because Johnny's like, you know, let's get it on and, you know, get it over with. You know, like.
I remember, because the I Still Burn, I was watching when the people reaction videos on YouTube where they hear it for the first time. And the one guy was just going nuts when you played your solo for I Still Burn. And he was so crestfallen when it was done. He's like, that's the greatest song. I love it. I wish the solo was longer, but anyways, but you're like, you're lucky you got four bars at all.
Yeah, you're lucky. And I knew this one song had a long solo, so I knew it needed to go to Billy.
It's a great solo, yeah. Dude.
Thank you. You know, when I got it, I hadn't heard any lyrics. I hadn't heard anything.
Oh,
so
wow.
I didn't even send him the song.
Yeah.
I sent him the section of the solo.
Wow. And he sent me the title. I was like, okay, this song is called The Vulture Club. So I started just thinking about how vultures sit on the side of the freaking road eating a carcass, and just starting thinking of dark notes, you know what I mean?
Like? What does that sound like?
I started thinking of dark notes, but, you know, throwing some crazy sounds and speed in there, and just, you know.
That's cool, man. Yeah. That's a very cool story.
Yeah, that's how I, because he sent me the section with the title.
Yeah.
And that's what I thought about when I did it. And I actually came around pretty quick, actually, to do it, you know.
They usually say, and you can chime in too, Rich, is that the best solos are ones that usually kind of come up pretty quickly?
Well, I mean, there's two ways of it. It's the ones that it's really quickly, it feels right, and then there's the ones that you compose.
Yes.
Yeah, and those are, and there's two different worlds. I mean, Eddie Van Halen was always classic for being a first take, first idea guy, and then you had guys like George Lynch who loved to build solos, mm-hmm. you know, and Randy Rhoads who would slave and labor over solo for weeks.
Right.
And so I don't know that any one way is right, but it is, I think, the best solos lie in the extremes, you know?
I think I Still Burn, that solo you wrote right after Eddie Van Halen passed away, right?
Right, yeah.
Was it kind of inspired by
100%, yeah. I just, it was, yeah, matter of fact, like 2 days after he died, and it was like, we got to do something that's got that kind of vibe to it. Listen, no bands write records that aren't colored by their heroes.
Of course.
And that's the one thing, is like when someone goes, oh, it reminds me a little bit of that. It was like everything. We are listening to Sam Cooke. PJ and I were listening to some Sam Cooke on the bus the other night. It's dead on Steve Perry melodies.
Oh yeah, oh,
it's absolutely. You know, it's like
down to the words.
Yeah, absolutely. You make me weak. It's in one of his songs. Dude,
all of the Beatles melodies prior to '64 is all Chuck Berry and Little Richard.
Yep. Oh yeah,
I gotta tell it, man.
Yeah. And it's what we do as songwriters, even if we don't realize it. Because we are fans of this. We're attracted to that. It's the same way that chefs are cooking, the way the foods that they've eaten that they were inspired by.
Just took the words out of my mouth. The ingredients, we have ingredients. We collect it. What ingredients do you have? You know, put them in the pot.
Yeah, if you think J.J. Abrams isn't making Steven Spielberg movies, you're
Stranger Things is all Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, totally.
Last couple things as we start to wind down here. So now we've went through the album. We've told the whole backstory. What is your favorite song on the record? Once again, the tale of two albums. Favorite song on the record that we've been playing live, and that includes the Vulture Club, which we're not doing currently. And then favorite song of the songs that no one has quote unquote heard yet. I'll start with. I still think my favorite. It's hard. Purifier is my favorite to play live, but I Still Burn is my favorite to sing. And of the other ones, The Worst Is Yet to Come, I think is my favorite for that one. PJ?
I'll go Purifier and Ugly.
I'm going to go I Still Burn. Love playing that live. Love the song. And I'm going to say What Hell Is Like. I love that. Yeah, I love that.
How was that trying to learn that riff?
Well, now that I don't know it. Pretty hard.
I'll let you know. I'm going to revisit that one.
If you had to learn it.
Yeah.
All right. Grant?
I'm going to have to go with I Still Burn. It's amazing seeing the crowd reaction already from every night playing that song, people singing every word. And then Army of One, that one sticks out to me. I can't wait for everyone to hear that.
What's the hardest song for you to play in the set?
Currently, it would have to be, are we going off the new album?
No, just out of all the songs we're playing.
It took me longest to learn Sin and Bones properly.
Gotcha.
Properly to lock in with Rich, Billy, and PJ.
That's the hardest song.
Yeah,
say, yeah,
100%. But once it gets locked in, it's beautiful.
Smooth sailing.
Yeah,
Richie, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm going with Sane. I think it benefits from the fact it's the set opener.
Can't go wrong with
it, the energy, you can feel it in the room, and it's a riff of Palooza. And I love your vocal melodies, and I am living within this night.
It's a great opening.
Man.
Yeah, man,
it really is a great song. And then What Hell Is Like and Ugly are probably tied for me, just because I can't wait to play both. They probably towards the end of the album cycle, we should at least think about putting those two in.
I think, honestly, and we've said this before, I think at some point we could do this whole album in its entirety.
Yeah.
I think we could, you know, because every song on it works. And like I said, I know it does because I saw it in London for 800 people that were a little disappointed we weren't playing. What are we going to be hearing? And they loved every f-ing song.
And also, don't forget, when you ask the crowd every night how many people have seen us before, we get a good reaction.
Yeah, yeah.
But the bigger reaction is how many people are seeing us for the first time.
Yeah, 60-70%.
So it's not like anyone's going to go get, you know, a refreshment during any particular song. Cause...
Right. Well, congrats, guys. We got a great record here. And a great band, and I'm excited to tour the world and elsewhere and play all these new songs for everybody. Congratulations.
Congrats.
Thank you, man.
We did it.
We did it.
We did it.
We did it.
Yeah.
And collectively, I can say that definitely we rock.
Yeah. I rock.
That's a car from the 80s.